This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Colonel Pete Crane, U.S. Army retired. He's the Vice President of Education and Access at the World War II Museum, and there's a lot going on at the museum this weekend. He's here to talk to us about it. Colonel, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and thanks for having me today.
Colonel, let me also thank you for your service to our country. For me, Veterans Day is every day, and we appreciate saying it.
Well, thank you. I loved my time in the Army, so I appreciate being allowed to do it.
Well, thank you. So tell us about what y'all have in store for tomorrow, Saturday, November 16th at the museum.
It's going to be a great day. We are having both our family and military appreciation block party. And where we're going to have live entertainment, we'll have bands, we're going to have activities for kids, we'll have displays put on by the military branches around here, we'll have the Tulane Navy game on TV, and then we're going to finish it up in the afternoon with a highlight program for a new exhibit we just opened on Veterans Day, on Monday, called Fighting for the Right to Fight, African American Experiences in World War II. And we'll have to the curators who designed and built the exhibit talking about their inspiration and how they brought it to life. And the best part is, of course, it's all free to the public. So the museum will be free tomorrow.
And that display, I believe, will be, it started on Veterans Day and will be, it'll go through July 27th of 2025, right?
That's correct. So if you miss it tomorrow, you'll still have another chance for a few more months. But that when it closes here next summer, it's going to travel around the rest of the country.
Tell us a little bit about that display.
So the exhibit, Fighting for the Right to Fight, was taken from a World War II veteran who was talking about the fact that, quite frankly, the military didn't want a lot of African Americans fighting. And they really had to overcome obstacles and racism at home and to be able to put on the uniform. And more than 1.2 million African Americans served in uniform during World War II. So they served in great numbers and were on every battlefront that America fought in.
And that very happenstance, when folks look back, really believe that that broke down a lot of barriers as a result of that, right?
Oh, absolutely. there was a phrase, kind of a rallying cry, that came about from a black newspaper called the Pittsburgh Courier in the beginning of the war. And it was called the Double V Campaign. It stood for victory over fascism abroad and victory over discrimination at home. And so, you know, these men and women that served knew that they were fighting for something even more than just defeating the Nazis and Japan, that so many of them, when they came home from the war, took off their uniforms and became leaders of the civil rights movement that fought for many of the gains in the 1940s and 1950s and 60s. So, and became leaders in the country in all walks of life. And we talk about that in the exhibit.
It was interesting because in the aftermath of the war, black families experienced some of the highest prosperity that they have in the history of the nation.
That's true. But it was kind of checkered in a way, in that, mm-hmm. you know, the GI Bill that, you know, helped me get my home loan and is putting my son through college today, was administered locally. The GI Bill legislation itself was written, you know, color and gender blind, but it was administered at the state level. And so there's very checkered past on whether African Americans were able to get their GI Bill benefits. So many did not get them, but on the other hand, you know, hundreds of thousands were able to go to college or get home loans that would not have otherwise.
Yeah, it's like you said, checkered is a good way of putting it, because there were obviously wins and losses all throughout. But the strength of the familial unit that just walked hand in hand with those leadership characteristics that so many young men of all races and folks of all races and all genders learned through the military, they were able to bring that home and utilize it in their private life.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, one of the other great points that we talk about in this exhibit is the home front. You know, not only was it that there were 1.2 million African Americans in uniform, but there were also millions of other African Americans that went to work in factories. And, you know, it, just right here in New Orleans, something to be proud of is the Andrew Higgins Industries. And Higgins was very progressive for his time, in that he paid his employees by their skill set and not by their gender or by their race. So if you were a master welder, you got paid as master welder no matter who you were. And that was not common at the time. So it's something where, you know, the story really comes right home here to New Orleans.
And it ends up being one of the most productive factories during the war, too, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, all the landing craft produced in the United States was produced right here by Higgins Industries. So there were more than 20,000 landing craft, and Higgins had more than five assembly lines going in different locations around the city during the war. It's a major contribution to World War II.
I love what y'all do. Y'all bring forward so many different exhibits that are of real consequence and totally relevant to not only the history of our country, but even moving forward as well. And the educational aspect, it's much broader than just the exhibits y'all have, because there's so much more that the museum does, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm very proud of our educators and what we are doing for students, not only here and getting field trips for schools here in the New Orleans and throughout Louisiana, but what we're doing online and running teacher training programs and student leadership programs in person here for educators from around the country, so that You don't just have to be here to learn the lessons from World War II. And we're building networks of teachers around the country and giving them the curriculum and the tools they need in their classrooms to be able to tell the story and really inspire kids today based on the lessons of the generation 80 years ago.
So if I've got this straight, tomorrow's celebration, you have access to all seven pavilions, and all of this is free tomorrow. And this starts
and,
at what time?
Even on top of the seven pavilions, also our Tom Hanks movie, Beyond All Boundaries, and our newest film in the Liberation Pavilion will also be free. So it's a good opportunity for folks to come on in. And if you haven't seen it in a while or haven't seen it at all, tomorrow's a great day to come and see it all for free.
Absolutely. And the weather is supposed to be stunning. So there's no excuse, right? It looks like all the stars are aligning for you guys for tomorrow.
And I had my fingers crossed, because if you want to see displays by the Marines and the Army out on our parade ground, it really helps to have good weather.
So this all starts at what time, Colonel?
Well, it's going to start when in the morning when we open up at 9 o'clock, and the Military Appreciation Block Party will go on up right till the Fighting for the Right to Fight opening reception at 4 o'clock. So we're going to have activities going on from 9 till 6 p.m. tomorrow.
So 9 to 6 tomorrow, folks, get out to the World War II Museum, 945 Magazine Street, everything. It's like getting an all-access pass to a concert tomorrow free. You can go. You can meander through anything that you want on that campus tomorrow. Those opportunities, they're not always there, so you want to take advantage of this one, right?
Absolutely, and I'm really looking forward to seeing everybody coming on out.
Yep. Colonel Pete Crane, U.S. Army retired, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate all that you do as Vice President of Education and Access at the World War II Museum. And again, thank you for your service. And I wish everyone felt the way I do. Veterans Day is every day, and we should thank them every day if we can. Thank you, Colonel. Have a great day tomorrow and much success. We will be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Stay with us. So the state's film and TV tax credit has been mimicked by a number of states across the country, and by all respects, anyone that has reviewed it thinks that it has been something incredibly positive to the state of Louisiana, and for some reason, it's on the chopping block. And here to talk to us about it is Jason Wagensback, president of Film Louisiana. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, Neil. Thanks for having me today.
So, Jason, where do we stand here? There's a lot of moving parts going on in Baton Rouge today. Where are we as it relates to the film tax credit?
Yeah, you know, it's a day-by-day, minute-by-minute thing happening at the Capitol at the moment. And where we stand right now is the fact that we are working with legislative leaders on both sides, the House and the Senate, as well as LED and the governor's office, to put a deal in place to find the best path forward for Louisiana and the film industry. And we're feeling optimistic about where we're headed right now.
So I know one of the things that has been proposed by the administration is to move this under the auspices of Louisiana Economic Development as a grant. From your perspective, what is the better course of action, a tax incentive or a grant?
The better course of action is to stay the course. I mean, you have 40 other states that have copied our program and the way it currently sits. And obviously, we've been having it set up here in Louisiana for 20 years now. We were the first state to put it in action. And if 40 other states copied us, we're obviously doing something right, considering we're number four out of the top five in the United States right now for film production.
Yeah, so, I mean, is this something that you folks are willing to the grant thing to me is that's a little tenuous. I mean, there's a lot of subjective things that are there. You don't always know what matrix you're being judged by. Are they competitive grants or whatever? This tax incentive route just always seemed like a better route to me.
Well, if you look at it like this, the tax incentive route, you know, for us in our eyes, obviously works better because of what you just pointed out. We're not picking we're not out there picking who it is that we decide that we're coming to. We're driving a full course of business here. And we also have to, in the tax credit incentive route, we have to spend the money to actually get the credit. So we actually find projects that come here, apply for a credit. They spend the money over the course of 8 to 12 months. They go through an audit process for about the same amount of time, 8 to 12 months, and then they're given their credit to make sure that the spending was done here in Louisiana, hiring good Louisiana folks, and then they get cash in hand to be able to continue doing business here.
So does it seem like there's some space to compromise on the part of the administration of staying the course as opposed to going to this grant world?
Look, we're in deep conversations around all of it. I would say yes, there's conversations around continuing the course. There's conversations around adding a potential grant program. We like the opportunity that the governor is creating a better business climate for the state of Louisiana. We obviously see that as a positive for our industry. But continuing that forward and then putting new tools in the LED's toolbox, which from a quote that they're, you know, continuing to put out there, we agree works as well. But if we have a program that has worked successfully for 20 years and is now a billion-dollar program, we want to continue down that path moving forward the same way as it is.
What are you hearing from those folks that make these decisions about whether they come here or not? About where we are today?
Well, you know, we're obviously getting a lot of calls from Hollywood, mostly because you have some national articles coming out that are really not painting the proper picture. People don't quite understand the political process. We understand it went through the House. That's been something we all have understood this entire time, that the House is going to be, favorable and want to push this entire plan forward before it kind of finds its roots in changing things up in the Senate. And that's currently where we're sitting right now. And you're reading a lot of that in the paper, I'm sure, that things are going to start really figuring themselves out on what the best path forward of this plan is in the Senate. So from Hollywood's perspective, we're obviously hearing a lot of, a lot of concern. There's a lot of people who are concerned about what the future of the industry is. And we've all told them to take a deep breath. We've been through this in the past. We've had to, go through some of these hurdles before, but we always seem to find success. We always seem to find the best path forward, and that's what's continued us down this road for the long run that we've had here.
I think it helps, though, right, to have the president of the Senate, Cameron Henry, who's actually had his hand in kind of the creation of this tax credit, if my memory serves me correct, right?
Cameron, well, it's actually started by Steve Scalise and Cedric
Cameron,
Richmond.
Yeah. So it was Cameron was on his staff, Cameron, if my memory is.
Yeah, he was on his staff, and then a few years later, Cameron actually did a really fantastic thing, which was he made the program with no sunset and with no cap, allowing for business to really grow here in the state, which it did. It really sprouted quite a bit as that became a reality for Cameron.
Yeah, I mean, I remember it vividly. He took a lot of criticism for it at the time, but actually the proof's in the pudding. It led to a very successful outcome.
10,000 jobs. $360 million in payroll, and like I said, nearly $1 billion in annual sales to the state of Louisiana. LED puts out an economic impact study that shows that for every dollar out, six times comes back to the state of Louisiana through the film and television industry. To us, it's a no-brainer. I think to the majority of Louisianians, it's a no-brainer. But when we come down to budget deficits, we seem to be one of the ones that is always up on the chopping block for the main reason that we're a bright, shiny object. We bring in a lot of stars. We're in the news a lot. So people pay attention to us and feel that some politicians feel that that's something they could potentially look at as a savings. But on the other hand, it is massive boon for the entire industry and the entire state here in this in the way we've set this up.
You know, it's a little frustrating, though, I have to imagine, though, right? Because everybody's talking about ROI, return on investment. And, you know, you just riddled these numbers out there. It's like, well, it seems to be big ROI there.
I completely agree. Anytime that you're creating an incentive, you're investing in an opportunity for a business to come to the state and, you know, put down roots, to set up shop, to hire people, and to spend money. And that's what the film industry does. It is the very definition of economic development. It is money that was not otherwise going to be put in this state that is now being spent here in this state and multiplied throughout the industry as a ripple effect and throughout the entire state. We've had 33 parishes with film activity in the last 5 years. I don't know if you know this or not, but I put out a stat recently by mycastingfile.com, which is from a local here with Glorioso Casting, who started this. It's a national database now for casting for extras. And he now has 89,960 people registered in the state of Louisiana to be an extra in a movie. The majority of those people that are trying to be extras are people who are going in between jobs or making supplemental income, elderly people that are looking for, you know, some time to network and also to bring in some extra cash. That's a massive amount of people in the state that are affected by film.
Now, obviously, I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. And I'm sure there are more and more little anecdotal sidebars like that, right?
They're all over the place, and we're really trying to do that with Film Louisiana now. We're really trying to show more of those stories throughout the state. We actually, I'll give you a little bit of an insight of what we're about to do. We're about to tell a fantastic story about a man and his wife from Amy, Louisiana. He's a horse trainer. And about 8 years ago, he started training horses on a couple of small shows, and he got picked up by a guy named Tyler Sheridan and got sent to a television series called Yellowstone. And you want to know where he trains all those horses and where all that income comes in? Comes into Amy, Louisiana. But he's doing all his shows in Utah and Montana and Texas for this massive juggernaut of a show, and he's become one of the biggest horse trainers now for Tyler Sheridan. So it's those types of really sensational Louisiana true stories that are happening to our communities everywhere across the state.
That's one of the few shows that I wait in anticipation for the next release.
Did you watch it on Sunday? It came out on Sunday.
I did. I will admit to same. I did. And the next one that comes out, I'll be watching it on that day that it comes out as well. It's been incredible, right? I mean, it's from, was it 1923 and the previous? I mean, just I've enjoyed every single last one of them. Just great production, cinematography over the top. And now that I know this other little caveat about the horse training, it's going to intrigue me even more because the show is nothing but horses, right?
Yeah, well, they're also, what's also really interesting is the caterer is also from here. The caterer on that show is from Louisiana, and Gator, who plays a character in the series, is one of the, is all from the Crafty team that was down here in Louisiana working for the last 10 years. He actually got a part in it. But what's the great part about the fact that the caterer is from here, the caterer is shipping up Louisiana seafood to all of their filming locations across the Midwest. And so they're getting, because they love our food, and we're getting this rich, wonderful taste on these film productions from what food we can provide here. They're shipping it to other states. The film industry is doing that, and those things aren't things that are being captured. And we're really trying to understand more and more of that so that we can prove that in more of an economic study that the film industry is really spreading its wings far and wide and touching so many sectors.
Jason, I guess, you know, everybody looks at themselves in the mirror critically, or if you're going to succeed in life or in business, you have to, right? Do you think maybe y'all are not telling your story enough? I mean, these are little nuggets that are just huge, right?
You're absolutely right. Newell, like I said, we really turned over a new leaf. We were, at the beginning of this year, we were an organization called LFEA, Louisiana Film Entertainment Association, and we decided to rebrand ourselves and create a new marketing engine for this state around film. And so we rebranded as Film Louisiana for that direct objective. We have been going out, we've been raising money so that we can start telling more of the stories from all over the state. There's another story I'm going to tell you right now in Uptown New Orleans. A woman had her house rented on a show called Mayfair Witches. That woman felt that the money that she took off of that show and rented her houses was much better needed in Generet, Louisiana, where her hometown was. And she poured all of that money, tens of thousands of dollars, into downtown development of Generet, Louisiana, and beautified that entire town. It's those Wow. types of things that people don't hear or realize or recognize that we're really trying to pull out. And we've hired a marketing team and a PR team to really help us really embolden what it is that we do here, because I agree with you. We need to tell more of our stories. We're storytellers at heart, and we hope that we can get into the hearts and minds of more people that understand what it is our business is more about.
You know, I got to learn some about it because, you know, there's security on these sites and traffic control, and they've hired, you know, some of my officers when I was sheriff and NOPD folks and others. And they started telling stories about opportunities that were created for local folks. And it really intrigued me, the breadth and the depth of the service industry to the film industry. I didn't realize that it was so broad and had so many different touchstones.
Well, I can tell you my facility out in Chalmette, Louisiana, the Ranch Film Studios, we are, you know, we have such a great relationship with Sheriff Jimmy Pullman out there. His officers are constantly on our shoots. We also have a wonderful relationship with the fire department. St. Bernard Fire is constantly being hired to come out on our shoots as well. And so we are, you're right, we are hiring third-party vendors, services, municipalities. We're renting city buildings. We're renting state parks. There is money that is going into the communities here that I wish we could really pull out and take a lot more and really study to understand that impact on a broader horizon. I completely agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, you're just kind of, you know, in the business doing what you do and getting what you need together to get it done, never really thinking about having to completely defend yourself in some way, shape, or form, right?
You're right, but it's a part of, you know, what we have to go through. Like I said, you know, it's an interesting time in politics, I guess, in the last decade where we've had so much turnover. I feel like we've had between 25% and 40% turnover in the legislative body almost every other year, and we're constantly educating legislators on what it is that we do, having them meet folks from their backyards, from their parishes and their communities who've been affected by film, whether it's family members who've, you know, taken up jobs in those communities or had to move to others where they know they have more permanent positions or are finding greater amounts of work, or even just, you know, legislators who've had a massive impact of a major film that's come, like Kastashi National Forest had a big film that came up there a couple of years ago, and the senator up there was just blown away by the beehive of activity on a film set, the amount of things and the amount of people that were hired. You know, we had Logan, the last Wolverine movie, was filmed up in Leesville, Louisiana. I think it was about a decade ago, and they were hiring, staff from farmers, and they were telling farmers to please plant, you know, cornfields out of season. I mean, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars so that they can have the right look for their show. They're making substantial amounts of money in a season that they're not necessarily having any harvest or any crop. It's those types of things that really don't get out into the community. It's those types of things that people don't really recognize. But what really affects legislators is when they come to set, they come to a studio, or they're able to come and see the activity, it really opens their minds and opens their eyes to what it is that we do in our industry, which is pretty fantastic.
Jason, I told this story the other day. I traveled to the Northeast, and I went to Salem, Massachusetts. And the way that the story goes, you know, with the witch trials that were there, small in number, really, in the overall scheme of things, insignificant. So the production Bewitched had a problem with their studios in California. Somebody comes up with the idea. You know, they got this Salem witch trial thing over in Salem that happened historically. Maybe we can incorporate that, and we can film. I think they filmed, I don't know, 7 episodes or whatever it was in Salem, Massachusetts. You ought to go look at the story. It completely re-engineered that town once those episodes aired. Opened up a whole new opportunity for them vis-a-vis tourism. Hundreds of thousands of folks, if not a million, visit this little bitty town in Salem every year. In fact, there's a bronze statue of Bewitched in the center square.
Isn't that remarkable? Talk
about a complete metamorphosis for this town.
That's what marketing will do. And that's what I think that the majority of the other states have recognized, is that if we can drive more production into our states, more stories will be told about our towns, our communities, and our people. And that's what's going to end up giving them the biggest bang for their buck. You do recognize that, you know, when NCIS New Orleans was here, the amount of tourism activity was phenomenal. You had people from all over the world saying, I want to come and see where Scott Bakula did this and stood in this bar and arrested this person. You know, what about Steel Magnolias? 40 years ago, Natchez, Louisiana. Yeah. That movie still to this day rings true in that town, and people want to come see that house. You know what's interesting? I was telling you we hired a PR firm to help us. We got them to start studying things for us because there's something called ad equivalency. And what ad equivalency is how much you would have to pay to get the same viewership in a marketing approach or in a marketing structure or concept or campaign. And so we did 4 studies. I want to give you a couple of quick stats. The Haunted Mansion, which was released last year in July of 2023, and it was set in New Orleans, Louisiana. They had some filming here. Not the whole thing was filmed here, but most of it was set right here in Louisiana, New Orleans, Louisiana. And in a 4-month span from July to September, it got 20.57 billion with a B estimated reach, with a $38.76 million ad equivalency. That's massive. That's exposure that we would have had to pay $40 million for in the state of Louisiana that we got because somebody came and filmed here. It's so
And a lot of it, you could not even buy it in the way that it had the ultimate impact, right?
100%.
You wouldn't end up with that intended output. That's just the kind of the way it works. Absolutely incredible. Well, best of luck in saving this. We here on this show understand the importance of it. I've talked to so many people in the film industry, not only a sheriff, but since I've been on air, and it's something that we should be proud of as opposed to thinking about cutting, and hopefully that doesn't happen. Best of luck
to you,
Jason
Wagensbeck,
president of Film Louisiana. We really appreciate your time, your insight. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Let's go to David on the talk line. David, you're up. What say you?
Hello, Newell. Thanks for taking my call, sir. Been a while since I've talked with you. I'd like to talk about a few facts with the Trump investigations and the appointments and an honest discourse, if you would, sir. the guy that's heading up the DOJ has just shed multiple indictments that would have potentially put him away for the rest of his life. I don't know. You can maybe share with us how you feel about that in a minute. But, I would offer that that would be akin to the sheriff of Jefferson Parish being under multiple investigations or an indictment, if you will, and bringing in the animal control officer to be his chief investigator, not knowing any of the files existing or evidence compiled in those files. Quite ridiculous, I think most people honestly would admit. That's the situation we find ourselves in. We're looking at Matt Gaetz as his nominee for the AG. I did a little bio study on Mr. Gaetz last night. He graduated from William & Mary in 2007 with his law degree. Went to Congress in 2010. So he worked for 3 years for a law firm in Fort Walton Beach as a junior attorney. And I would imagine, I don't know, but I would imagine his courtroom defense time was very limited. Certainly no prosecutorial experience. And this is the man he offers to head the DOJ to replace any of the possible competent investigators who have served 30 or 40 years protecting our country, with holding to the vest all of the deepest secrets of Russia and the other adversaries that we have in this country, and bringing in someone who has not a stick of knowledge about any of that. Quite ridiculous. We're also looking at Tulsi Gabbard being appointed to run the intelligence chief, who has not one day's experience in national intelligence. And also, there we have many investigators who have served 30. Again, we have many investigators that have served in that capacity 30 and 40 years, been stalwarts of our security in this country. But the problem is, Mr. Newell, that they know all of the dirty deeds about Mr. Trump.
That who does? Well, let me say this. I would agree with you. I don't think Matt Gaetz is a strong nominee for that position, not by any stretch of the imagination. Tulsi Gabbard, I would disagree with you in that respect. I do believe that she has a level of experience that she can bring to that job. But I think of all of the ones that have been made, Matt Gaetz certainly, I believe, is lacking. The same way that I thought that Pete Buttigieg was lacking when they named him to be the secretary to the Department of Transportation. He was a mayor of a town that had a population of 103,000. And when you look at the budget as it related to transportation in that city, it was de minimis. But yet, for whatever reason, they thought he was worthy. I kind of chuckled when I heard Hakeem Jeffries, the minority leader, say the other day that are these the best qualified individuals to serve in this capacity? Well, no one could go through the list in the Biden administration, or let's just say the last five administrations, and say that 100% of cabinet appointees, that they would all be the best that we have to give by any stretch of the imagination. It's political posturing at best. But I would agree, as it relates to Matt Gaetz, I just don't think that's a strong choice at all. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with the voice of the New Orleans Saints, Mike Haas, and we'll preview the Saints-Browns game, and then Jan Cooper, board member, French Quarter Management District, about what's going on there. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.